So my dissertation research deals with how host social structure influences evolution of that host symbionts. And throughout the talk today, I'll be using that term symbiont in its broad sense to identify animals that live in close association with other organisms, but independent of fitness consequences, so parasites, commensals, mutualists, etc. And I'm not going to be talking about that broader question that I'm trying to answer today, but I do want to discuss how I've been working to develop my study system. My study system are halictid bees and their associated nematodes. Before I move on from this slide, I'd just like to point out what we're looking at here. This is a laboratory colony of Halictus ligatus, and it's a brood cell that we're looking into. You can see inside the brood cell the outline of the bee pupa, and then the nematodes that I study are on the walls of that brood cell also. So just to expand on that life history a little bit, when the bee is developing inside the brood cell, the nematodes go through several generations of sexual reproduction concurrently. As the pupa reaches the stage where it's about to emerge into adulthood, the nematodes move into what's called a dower stage. The dower stage is a non-feeding transport stage, so they're not directly feeding upon their host at that stage. If the host is a female, when she occloses into adulthood, the dowers will climb into her Defoe's gland, from which they are then subsequently vertically transmitted to her next offspring via, when she lines the brood cell walls, she uses a Defoe's gland secretion, so the nematodes are directly passed there. If the bee host is a male, the nematodes will climb into the penis valves of the male, suggesting that there is also some possible sexual transmission in this system. And I'd also like to say that we don't, as of this stage, know whether it's a parasitism, commensalism, or a mutualism. So for the past several summers, I've been surveying the bee fauna in central and northern Virginia to identify what different species of bees that host these nematodes. And what I've found are six different species of halictids that are host to this nematode, which has been named Odunkospiculum halicti by Robin Giblin Davis, the person who originally identified these species. Three of my host species, Augochlora, and then the two species that are in the genus Augochlorella, are in the host tribe Augochlorinae, and then the three species of ligatus of Halictus are in the host tribe Halictinae. So the next question that I wanted to ask is it just one species of nematode, this Odunkospiculum halicti, or is Odunkospiculum halicti really a species complex with many cryptic species in it? So to address these sorts of questions in symbiotic relationships, the phylogenetic species concept has been used numerous times, and this can really change the way that we view these symbioses. So that's been found in fig wasps and their hosts, in cycliophorans, which are a symbiont of lobsters, in mycorrhizae and green algae, they're involved in lichen symbiosis, and also in anther smut, which is a fungal pathogen of plants in the family Caryophyllaceae. Once you have those sorts of cryptic species complexes identified, another common way to delve deeper into the evolutionary history is to look at the host's tree and compare it to the symbiont's tree. And outside of endocellular symbioses, it's somewhat uncommon to find that there's strict host-symbiont co-speciation, that the host tree exactly matches the branching patterns of the symbiont's tree. This is a good example that is an extracellular symbiosis with aphids as a host insect and then symbiotic gut bacteria. And also yesterday there were some very compelling trees that were presented about nasal mites and their avian host by people in Greg Spicer's lab and Greg Spicer too. So excellent example of strict host symbiont co-speciation there too. But whenever you have any sort of horizontal transmission in the system, it's much more common to find these sort of tangled host symbiont phylogenies. And that's taken as a sign of either diffuse co-speciation or host switching patterns. The diffuse co-speciation is, of course, caused by this host switching patterns. But there's several programs, statistical programs out there that people use to sort of detect a signal of co-speciation in these tangled patterns. So in my system, I've been using two genes to look more deeply at the nematode species to see if there are cryptic species, a mitochondrial gene, cytochrome oxidase, and then a nuclear gene, D2D3 region of ribosomal DNA. I've amplified and sequenced about a little bit over 1,100 base pairs of these two genes, and then I've built phylogenetic hypotheses using both the single genes and then the concatenated gene data set using two different methods so far, the maximum likelihood and neighbor joining methods. The single gene trees for and the concatenated trees for the neighbor joining method all agreed with the concatenated tree from the maximum likelihood method, but the single gene trees from the maximum likelihood methods had slight differences, though the basic topology held up. So This, of course, is the nematodes tree, and what you can see is that there are species of cryptic species of nematodes that cluster by host instead of clustering by geography. So, as an example, in Agochlora pura, here this outlined in purple, this clade, the way that I've named these taxonomic units is first the host species that the nematodes were isolated from, and then the site in central and northern Virginia that they were collected at. So you can see that all of the nematodes isolated from Agochlora pura cluster together in one clade, and that clade is sister taxa to the nematodes isolated from the two species of Agochlorella. So this whole clade up here is reciprocally monophyletic. Well, this whole clade has been isolated from the host tribe Agochlorinae, and those nematodes are reciprocally monophyletic to nematodes isolated from the host tribe Halictinae. So in Aqua, I have Halictus ligatus, and that's sister taxa to nematodes isolated from both Halictus rubicundus and Halictus parallelis. The one node, I forgot to mention that this tree is the neighbor joining tree and maximum likelihood tree gives me the exact same topology. So for this concatenated data set, but that the bootstrap values that I indicate here come from the neighbor joining analysis, not the likelihood analysis. So just to sort of shore up these phylogenetic species concepts, because I do have host-specific nematode species, I also conducted mating crosses of my nematodes. So I isolated nematodes from different hosts, put virgin nematodes together, and then looked for any signs of reproduction by those nematodes. And what I found was that Agochlora pura and in Agochlora persimilis, I had statistically significant by G tests, statistically significant reproductive isolation, but I didn't have complete reproductive isolation. Some similar tests like this were done by Robin Giblin Davis in the 90s. He did find complete reproductive isolation, so I don't have that. But these biological species concepts really helped to support my phylogenetic species concepts of the nematodes. So the next thing to look at is to determine if there has been co-speciation between the host and the symbiont. And to do this, I sequence genes from the host, which is appearing on the right here in B yellow. So this is my host tree here. I amplified and sequenced the CO1 gene from the host, and then I built this tree using the maximum likelihood method. And on the left-hand side in pink is the nematode tree. And what I did with this tree is I just took the cytochrome oxidase 1 maximum likelihood tree and pruned it down, so in the parentheses there are the number of samples that were in that larger tree that I showed a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And what you can see is that there has been strict co-speciation, which I was quite surprised by. I wasn't really expecting to find strict co-speciation because of that possibility of sexual transmission. I thought that sexual transmission would likely lead to congeneric mating attempts and host switching of the nematodes via that way. Instead, it appears that I have an ancient association between nematodes and bees here, and that is also suggested by the genetic distances, by the similar relative genetic distances on this tree. So in conclusion, I've had tight host-symbiont co-speciation of these host-specific nematodes that I'm quite excited by. And what's an interesting way to think about this is that the nematode tree actually retrieves perfectly the host tree, so the nematodes are actually acting just like genes. And we do know that genes in a social versus a solitary host, a gene that codes for altruistic behavior, is much more likely to increase in a social population than in a solitary population. So that sets the stage for the questions that I'm pursuing now. Are the nematodes more towards the mutualistic side, or in a solitary host, and more towards the virulent side of that continuum of mutualistic and parasitic behaviors? Okay, thank you very much for your attention. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Quinn?
Yeah. Yeah, I just did this last week, so I would like to look a little bit closer to try to find a better outgroup for the bees, yeah.